Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Friday. It's College Football Friday, NFL stuff too. 1 hour from now, a blazing five. This is The Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. I'm going to keep my facial hair. 2021, I paid off my bet with Joy Taylor this morning. I gave her initially I gave her 80. She called me out and said, hey, honey, bring the sugar.
Gave me the cash, and it was $20 short. I'm like, wait.
Colin, that's 80. I'm like, hold on. My 20s suck together.
He tried to short me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
I stayed up all night.
I'll tell you, I say this sincerely. I would not have gotten through this year without you.
I wouldn't have gotten through it without you. It was great to be here. It was definitely the biggest sense of normalcy being able to do the show.
Yeah, you've been an unbelievable partner.
Thank you.
I feel incredibly grateful, profound gratitude working with Joy Taylor and the staff here. But we got through it. There'll never be a year with less sports for 5 months, and we got through it. So
yeah, we did.
Way to go, us.
We made it.
All right, couple huge college football games. I don't start with college football much. Let me talk about this. Notre Dame plays Bama right after our show. Notre Dame's going to lose. Bigly. It's the year of Bigly. They're going to lose Bigly. And that's going to be okay, but SEC fans are going to point fingers. Overrated. No, what's overrated has been everybody in the SEC for the last 10 years not named Alabama. Let's take the last 5 years. Here's some Saban stats for you. He's 39-3 against the SEC. Average margin of victory, 20 points. But, Colin, that's counting the dogs in the conference. Okay, let's go to the big, big, big old Southern boys, Florida. Last 7 meetings against Florida, Nick Saban 7-0. Average margin of victory, 22 points. Georgia, on my mind. Okay, last decade, 5-0 against Georgia, 2 touchdowns, the average score. Never been an SEC coach to go to the NFL and crush. A lot of good players, not a lot of great coaches. Spurrier bombed in the NFL, so did Saban. It's a mostly lousy coach conference with unbelievable players. But you know who isn't afraid of Alabama? Clemson. Last 4 times they've met, they've split 2-2, and Bama's got a negative point differential. Clemson's also faced 10 times a team not called Alabama in the SEC. They're 9-1 against the SEC as Clemson, most by blowouts. Notre Dame has higher academic standards. It's harder to get in. Most of Bama and LSU's classes would struggle to get in. They wouldn't qualify. It's hard there. It's an amazing, amazing school. For them to win 10 games is unbelievable. And they don't play Troy State 3 times at Notre Dame. They don't play the Citadel. No, they don't. Their out-of-conference games are like Stanford, USC, not top 10 programs currently, but teams with a history of putting great players in the NFL. They don't get that off week against Panera Bread where they don't have to play starters and they get everybody healthy for the next week against Auburn. Everybody loves to point fingers every time Alabama rolls somebody. You know who they've been rolling for 12 years and humiliating? The SEC. Yes, this is Alabama's best team, arguably, and it's certainly their best offense. But 50 coaches have been fired since Saban's arrived. Auburn, how's that program doing? Just fired their coach and hired about the 8th choice. How's Tennessee? Bad. What else is new? South Carolina fired their coach. Florida just got rolled by Big 12 Oklahoma. Coach humiliated himself by saying game didn't count. Stop it. Nick Saban's the best college football coach ever. Don't point fingers today. Notre Dame winning 10 games in a remote, cold weather, academically rigid, with a religious awning hanging over it, is unbelievably difficult. I say this about Northwestern and Stanford. You win 8 games, tip of the cap. It's different other places. Some places are college football powers. That's okay. I'm not blaming them. But let's just have context here. Notre Dame has played in the last couple of years Georgia. Played them twice. Georgia is the second best program in the SEC. It's a great school. It's a great Athens is amazing. Unbelievable. If you've never been there, it's one of the great environments. I've been there twice. One of the great environments in college football. Notre Dame's played them twice. 20-19, 23-17. They've stacked up pretty good. When Notre Dame gets rolled today, don't point fingers. Have context. Everybody not named Clemson gets rolled by Alabama. They've got more good players. They can get them all in. They develop the hell out of them. And they got the best coach in college football history. Bama wins comfortably. But go ask Florida, Georgia. Texas A&M should have been in the playoff. You played Bama too and got destroyed. All right, so the other game I think is going to be really competitive. Joy doesn't, I do. I think Ohio State's going to give Clemson problems. I like Ohio State's defensive front, and I don't love Clemson's offensive line, and I think Trevor Lawrence will be under duress. But what you are watching with Trevor Lawrence today, and it's why I think Clemson probably figures out a way to win close, is the best college football quarterback ever. And bruh, it ain't close. 34-1. Vince Young gets an argument. He threw 44 touchdown passes. Trevor has 88 and counting. Tim Tebow had 6 losses. Didn't play much as a freshman, nor did Vince Young. As a freshman, Trevor Lawrence walked on the field and humiliated Nick Saban 44-16. He was 19 years old. And it wasn't an average game. You see, Nick had 3 top 22 players in the draft that year on defense. Nick had 6 weeks to prepare for him. And the 19-year-old ate Nick Saban's defense, filled with elite NFL players alive. Trevor Lawrence is easily the greatest college football quarterback of all time. Just compare him to Vince Young and Tebow, who maybe go 2 and 3, or a Tommy Frazier. This is a 90 touchdown pass, unbelievable as a freshman. There has been no dip since. Oh, he lost to LSU. Yeah. A team that got 14 players, a record, drafted into the NFL, probably the greatest college football team of all time. The idea, Andrew Luck, I think, redshirted as a freshman. Trevor Lawrence threw 30 touchdowns, 4 picks, but it was the ACC. Let me remind you, he humiliated Nick Saban. You are looking at a kid, we'll never see this again. I don't think we'll ever see a kid this good. He will go into the NFL next year, and this will sound hyperbolic. He will be a top 12 quarterback in the NFL. Think I'm crazy? Justin Herbert already is. You ask every NFL and the GM, Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins, Justin Herbert. It's not close. 32-32, take Herbert. I said when Zion Williamson came into the NBA, I said he will be, at some point in the first year, a top 25 player. I could not believe the pushback. He averaged over 22 points in 28 minutes. Have you seen Zion this year? He's a top 20 player production-wise in the NBA. So enjoy the games today. Yes, Alabama's going to roll Notre Dame like they've been doing to everybody in the SEC, everybody in college football not named Clemson for the last 12 years. And Ohio State's going to keep it close and probably not make it the most comfortable afternoon for Trevor Lawrence. But there's never been anything like that, ever. 34-1. And this year he's not working with a very good offensive line. Sans his left tackle, who's excellent.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So David Bakhtiari he's going to make the Hall of Fame. He's a left tackle for the Packers. He's now, it's just gutting. He's out for the year. I hate to see that. Big guys heal slowly. Practice injury, knee injury, he's out for the season. But I can see all the Packer fans lining up to make excuses. He missed 3 games earlier this year. Here were Aaron Rodgers' stats. 71% completion percentage, 11 touchdowns, no picks. passer rating of 130. David Bakhtiari is the best pass blocking left tackle in the NFL. Probably has been for 2 or 3 years. He is not worth a point in the NFL. He may be worth a half a point. Maybe. It didn't change the line yesterday much. Not that I can tell. Aaron Rodgers, in the 3 games he missed this year, was sacked twice. Now, it's the Bears. It's Khalil Mack. So Khalil Mack will be playing against a backup. That is never good news. And I imagine Aaron will get sacked by Khalil Mack this weekend, and it will be problematic, at least early. The Packer coaches will have to adjust to it. But let me give you Ronnie Stanley, Baltimore. He's another first ballot Hall of Fame left tackle for the Ravens. He's absolutely he's a Notre Dame guy, by the way, if I believe. Phenomenal player. Baltimore's offense struggled when he was healthy this year. Baltimore's rush-centric offense with Ronnie Stanley out is the hottest in the NFL. So Aaron Rodgers and Lamar Jackson are nimble enough that if they're missing their left tackle, they can adjust. Now, the Colts have a left tackle, Anthony Costanzo, who's very good. The Colts offense has struggled when he's out, but that's Phillip Rivers, who is about as nimble as my coffee table. So that's a different situation, but it's not going to affect. Remember, the year Aaron Rodgers won the Super Bowl, you remember that year, Charles Woodson got hurt in the Super Bowl. They had several key players that year and in the playoffs on the IR. So I don't think it's season ending. I don't think it lessens their chance to win the Super Bowl. Most of the really great edge rushers in the NFL right now are in the AFC. Joey Bosa is terrific. Myles Garrett is incredible. TJ Watt for the Steelers, I think, is unblockable. So to me, outside of Khalil Mack, most of your great edge rushers are on the other conference, the other side that Green Bay would not face until the Super Bowl.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
My buddy right now joining us live, Albert Breer, Monday Morning Quarterback. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Okay, so we said this yesterday. It's one of these awful hypotheticals. But I said, let's just think about it. So Ryan Fitzpatrick's out. Tua's playing. Yep. Buffalo's really good. So we look at the ease in which Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, and we look at the dynamic nature of Josh Allen. And Tua is averaging 160 passing yards a game. Their defense is great in Miami. Their coach is great. Their special teams are great. They're missing the piece. Tua goes out Sunday and looks small, is not dynamic, shrinks. You'd bench him if you could. They've got a number three pick. And Albert, they're never with Brian Flores going to get a number three pick again. What if Tua struggles? Is it nuts to think they would use that on a quarterback?
No. I think they've shown us. I mean, Brian Flores has given us the answers to the test. They're willing to buck convention. They're willing to think outside the box and how they've handled their quarterback situation this year. They went to Tua in the first place in a spot where no one would go to a young quarterback. They were winning when they did it. And since they've shown a willingness to go away from a young quarterback when everybody would say, well, you don't want to damage his confidence. You don't want to get into his head. What do? They go to Ryan Fitzpatrick in an effort to win games. And so I look at the organization and the way Chris Greer and Brian Flores have worked over the last 2 years and what an outstanding job they've done front to back, just building that team up, building the culture, everything else. I don't see why you wouldn't say that they would buck convention here and say, you know what? We like Tua. He's a good player. We can find something better. And I'll tell you, too, I mean, Colin, having talked to some executives who are watching this guy and evaluating this guy, they're seeing what I think a lot of people in the general public, maybe you and me included, are seeing, which you're not seeing elite traits right now. I mean, he just sort of looks average in a lot of ways out there. So you're right. I don't think they're going to be picking this high again under Greer and Flores. And so this might be their last opportunity to get an elite young quarterbacking prospect. So, I think that when we get to the offseason, we may be talking about them evaluating guys like Justin Fields and Zach Wilson up against Tua Tagovailoa.
So it's interesting because Jalen Hurts, meanwhile, has been more dynamic. They're averaging 440 yards of offense since he started. That's 100 and maybe 15 more than Carson Wentz. Yep. You know, the easy proposition is, just put Carson Wentz, put him again with Frank Reich, and go with Jalen Hurts. And I don't know if Jalen Hurts is going to make it, but I'll tell you, the arm's not an issue. He's made throws. I mean, with no preseason, not a lot of first-team snaps, 440 yards of offense. It doesn't seem crazy to move off Wentz and go with Jalen Hurts, does it?
No, and I think we have to see what this looks like coming out of the season. The owner's not happy with where they are. I think there's going to be some level of change. Now, I'm not saying head coaching change necessarily. I'm not saying GM change. But I think there's going to be some level of change in the football operation. Maybe some offensive staff changes. Maybe Doug Peterson's forced to bring in an offensive coordinator. So I think that's all going to go into the decision that you make in Carson Wentz. And I sort of think, Colin, now maybe you look at this and you say, okay, Wentz's deal is tradable, but is it really worth giving up on him for a third or a fourth round pick? Or should we swing the doors open to a competition if we can't get more than that in 2021 and just let Hurts and Wentz compete? That way you get a final answer on Wentz, on who he is as a player, and you give yourself a second shot with Jalen Hurts. One of the things that really sticks out about Jalen Hurts, just having talked to people and the amazing kind of ascension that he's had since he got benched at Alabama, the rate of improvement is really, really impressive. And if you talk to Lincoln Riley, you talk to Quincy Avery, his personal throwing coach, you talk to the people in the Eagles organization who scouted him, you know, where a lot of other teams saw a guy who had a ceiling as a passer, the people who liked him in that Philly building looked at him and said, the rate of improvement from Alabama to Oklahoma, and then just from Oklahoma to what he did in his pro day, which is right before COVID hit and shut everything down, was dramatic. And we're seeing, I think, more steps forward from Jalen Hurts. So I think the Eagles owe it to themselves to get a good look at Jalen Hurts. And if that improvement continues, and if they can't get like a haul for Carson Wentz, I certainly see where you could look at it if you're the Eagles and say to yourselves, you know what? Best thing for the organization, give ourselves two shots at having the quarterback of the future here. This way we get a final answer on who Carson Wentz is as a player, and we're giving Jalen Hurts a shot.
Yeah, you know, I should know better. I'm a dad. You see these huge leaps with your kids when they're 18, 19, 20. And I was one of those guys with Jalen Hurts. I'm like, he's a runner, not a thrower. And then I watched him 2 weeks ago, and I'm like, oh, he made two sideline throws. I'm like, no, he's fine. Like, we judge these kids at 20, and we just give up. Like, people don't improve. Here's another situation, and you know this very well, Albert Breer joining us. And Cam Newton's not coming back. You can't convince me of that. Belichick's not going to go through this stuff again. Boy, that Matt Stafford stuff feels so right. It feels so right. Give me your kind of, I mean, they don't draft high enough, Albert. They're not going to get one of the top four quarterbacks. They're just not. Next year, off season, what's New England going to do at quarterback?
I think they're going to look for an upgrade. I don't think they're averse to bringing Cam back. I don't think they'll bring him back without competition, though. He's been perfect as a person in the building. Like, as a player, obviously not. But as a person, he's done everything that they wanted. He's been a great teammate, a great leader, all of that. He's checked every box in that regard. And so I think Bill, to some degree, probably feels like, you know, if Cam wants to come back and compete for the job, we're going to leave the door open for that. But they are going to look for upgrades. And I think sort of, you know, big piece of this is going to ride on who's available to them. And, you know, Matthew Stafford, his availability is going to ride on whoever the next coach and general manager are. But he's got background now in New England system, having played for Matt Patricia. And he could be kind of what, like what Alex Smith was for Andy Reid in Kansas City, where you can win with him and he gets you to the next guy. And he gives you flexibility where you don't have to overreach for a guy in a certain year. So I think there's good logic there. And then the other name I think you have to take a look at is Jimmy Garoppolo. And if San Francisco, say, has a shot at getting Sam Darnold out of New York, do they do that? And then maybe Jimmy Garoppolo comes available. That'd be another name to watch. And then if you want to look further down the line, Jacoby Brissett's another guy who, you know, potentially could be a stopgap because he's got background there. But I think the Patriots are going to look at every level at quarterback here, both veteran, rookie, reclamation project. I think they're going to look at every single answer they possibly can to try to at least get back up to level water at the position.
By the way, do you have a vote for Coach of the Year and MVP?
I don't, no.
Okay, because I think I'd go, it's hard, Sean McDermott probably, or Brian Flores. It depends if Miami loses. Whoever wins that game, I'd probably give Coach of the Year to. I would give Aaron my MVP, Josh Allen 1A. If you had to do Coach of the Year and MVP, where you go?
I think I'd go with Brian Flores, just based on where they were at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
It's really hard to ignore, Colin. I mean, this was – if we're going back, you know, 16, 17 months, like it's easy to forget this. That was a freaking teardown. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, they lopped off Minkah Fitzpatrick and Laremy Tunsil in September of that year. Like, think about that. Those are two high-end players, and those were the last pieces of the teardown. So to be back in this position this quickly, I'm so impressed with what Brian Flores has done. And how quickly it's happened and how the team responds to him too. Like, we talked about those unconventional moves, like pulling your rookie quarterback in game and putting the veteran back out there, and the way the team's responded to that. I think it's so impressive what we've seen from Brian Flores this year. So he'd be my coach of the year at this point, again, pending what happens on Sunday. And I think you got to give the MVP to Aaron Rodgers. You look at the statistics, he's got better numbers than Mahomes. You look at what's around him. I think he's got less around him than Josh Allen or Mahomes have. And I think you see what you're seeing here is that second year in the Shanahan offense. It happened with Matt Ryan in Atlanta. He won an MVP in his second year under Kyle Shanahan there. It happened with Jared Goff in L.A. He went to the Super Bowl in his second year under Sean McVay. I think that's very much what we're seeing in Aaron Rodgers now. He's bought into Matt LaFleur's system, which is that Shanahan system, and we're seeing the results now. So he'd be my MVP.
Good stuff. Monday morning quarterback Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter. Happy holidays. Happy New Year to you, buddy. We love having you on the show.
Awesome. Happy New Year, Colin.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Yesterday, Greg Cosell was on and he talked about Lamar Jackson and he said, listen, he's got 44 touchdowns, no interceptions in the red zone. They're great on third down. He's a headache situationally. And, you know, it's funny. I look at them in the playoffs last year and Lamar's an MVP and it felt like, oh, Baltimore's got a role. And now I look at him and I think, I wouldn't want to play Baltimore. I'm not sure what the expectations are. Your thoughts about them as a playoff team?
You don't want to play Baltimore. It's like playing those teams that run the wing T in college football, or the, you know, they've got a scheme that nobody else is running. What Baltimore does is so unique and it's so difficult to deal with. And the fact that they're going into the playoffs and they'll be on a roll. I think they'll be what, four straight or five straight wins if they go in. So they're be red hot. Lamar doesn't have all the pressure that he had last year.
He doesn't.
The MVP, they had the number one seed. They're playing with house money. They do something that nobody else does, and they can eat up huge chunks of the clock, which means all those high-powered offenses and all those great quarterbacks, they're sitting watching as Baltimore just slowly grinds away at you. And it's a rough package to have to deal with if you're getting ready for them.
Yeah, and I love what you said. It's not the same. There is no pressure on Lamar this year. Last year it was the MVP. You got to win. And listen, we all react differently to pressure. This year he's better. He's played against more defenses. He's clearly improving, and there's no pressure.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.